This conference will.
Good morning and welcome to the Hidden Profits Teleseminar Series. I'm Linda Roth and I'm the founder and CEO of LJR Consulting Service and the sponsor of this Hidden Profits Teleseminar Series. LJR Consulting Services is a mid-market advisory firm and we help executives of mid-market companies, private equity firms, and others to improve their profitability by improving business process, organization, and information technology. The purpose of this teleseminar series is to explore ideas on how to make your business more profitable by implementing lean business practices to become more efficient and reduce costs. In modern times, we tend to focus first on revenue growth and second on financial reengineering, and oftentimes business completely overlook cost structure except in direct cost of production or during a downturn such as now. When we do focus on cost, it is usually either just product cost or temporary budget slashing. And today we have a whole bunch of temporary budget slashing going on. I call this the corporate crash diet. Just like people who want to lose weight in a hurry and drastically reduce eating, corporations want to lose cost fast, and they drastically reduce spending everywhere. However, as in the crash diet, this can't be sustained. And when you gain and on the crash diet, you gain all your weight back, and on the crash spending diet of corporations, you frequently gain all the cost back and sometimes more. We rarely change our lifestyles, and the same as we rarely change corporate lifestyles. In dieting, we have all learned that the way to be successful is to incrementally change our lifestyles and reduce the types of high-fat foods that we eat. And so the same is true in corporate, that we need to gradually change the corporate business process so that we reduce the amount of waste that is in the organization. And as humans, we really don't like a lot of change, especially big transformational change. So when it happens incrementally and we build an environment of rewarding small change, it really doesn't trigger all those anti-change alarms in people's psyches. So welcome to our seminar this morning. Our subject today is optimizing the supply chain. My guest expert is Gary Campbell, a principal at Impact Consulting. Impact is an enterprise-wide consulting firm. They work with mid-sized businesses from visioning and strategic formulation to measurable results. They define a corporate vision and align strategic and tactical elements into a winning business plan. So Gary, please tell us a little bit about yourself and Impact Consulting.
Thank you, Linda. I'm Gary Campbell, and let me just quickly review my background and then talk about a case study before we move into our subject for today. I've got a BS in industrial engineering from Purdue University and an MBA from Washington University in St. Louis with a concentration in finance and marketing. Early in my career, while I was in school and shortly thereafter, I gained an industrial experience with General Motors, Emerson Electric, and McDonnell Douglas. While I was with those firms, I primarily concentrated on new product introductions and cost reductions across manufacturing operations and the supply chain. Then I concluded I was interested in getting into the management consulting business, talked with a number of firms, and joined A.T. Kearney in their corporate office in Chicago. There I went through the ranks and was elected an officer and partner within the firm. Shortly thereafter, I was requested to transfer to the West Coast to Los Angeles and head up our West Coast consulting practice in Los Angeles and San Francisco. And my mission was to increase and build up our staff to service middle market and Fortune 500 companies, of which we did, with a focus on business strategy, marketing, manufacturing operations, and a heavy emphasis on supply chain operations. After I was with the firm 20 years, the partners, along with myself, decided we would sell the firm to EDS. Shortly thereafter, I concluded that I wasn't interested in being part of EDS, and along with a number of other partners from A.T. Kearney, Bain & Company, BCG, and KPMG Pete Marwick, we formed the Impact Consulting Group. At Impact, we have a chance to be actively involved in all the engagements versus focusing on business development and supervising a junior staff. So we're very much of a hands-on operation. And as Linda mentioned, we deal with a broad range of issues, anything from overall business and marketing strategy, in regards to capitalizing opportunities to increase market share, to the overall supply chain operations to improve customer service, reduce cost, and improve the overall profitability of the business. One of the recent case studies that you may be interested in was with a very large, well-known Japanese company that had a $250 million division here in the Los Angeles area that manufactured printers and copiers for both consumers and the industrial business. We had some initial conversations with them, and they concluded that they were interested in having us help streamline and improve the profitability of the business. The next thing they told us, we're going to sell the business. And then on Christmas Eve, I receive a call from Japan saying, Gary, can you be in Tokyo in 2 days? I said, naturally, I can do that. So I fly to Tokyo, have dinner with our key client member. The following day, I meet with 10 to 12 Japanese corporate executives. They tell me the issues, what they're interested in us accomplishing, and elected me chief operating officer. The following day, I returned to Los Angeles, and when I was leaving Japan, the chief operating officer of the company here in Los Angeles resigned. When I got back here, we formed a team of consultants that focused on finance for one consultant, marketing strategy for another one, supply chain operations, and the overall focus of the business. So as a team, we worked through this in about 4.5 months, restructured the business, and set it up for an improvement to profitability. And one of the key things that we focused on was the overall supply chain operation. It was very fragmented from the standpoint of operations being performed in Tokyo and also the U.S. It was fragmented in terms of product design, product introduction, manufacturing operations, split between both areas, and follow-up on customer service. So it was a real challenge, and I think we made some very important improvements, saved them a lot of money, and got the business back on track for moving forward.
Well, great. We're really looking forward to hearing what you have to tell us about finding those hidden profits in the supply chain process. So let's first talk about and give a definition of what we mean by the supply chain process, Gary.
Okay, Linda. As far as the supply chain process, it's extremely important to business. And if you look at a definition of it, it begins with customer requirements and ends with the product or service being delivered to satisfied customers. It aligns value-added steps from supply to consumption, including the processes, organization, and technology. An integrated supply chain becomes a real point of competitive advantage in regards to giving you an opportunity to not just reduce cost, but to improve service and gain additional market share. In regards to what type of businesses have a supply chain, it's really all types, whether it's retail, manufacturing, distribution, or service. Let's just quickly review the key processes that we believe are included within the supply chain. They include customer service, which is your customer service interface, and also focusing on your levels of service. It includes the forecasting of expected demand and also for the end product in addition to raw materials. It includes the purchasing and vendor management, and we'll talk more about vendor management and strategic sourcing a little later, the production planning process, the overall inventory management, warehousing, transportation, and the delivery of the overall product. So it's quite a broad definition, and it's highly important to the business and represents a significant cost for the overall business.
Well, yes, it is. I mean, once you get done with supply chain, based on that definition, about all that's left is marketing and finance, so it's a key part of the business. Now, Gary, you and I have talked before, and you also speak in terms of stages of excellence. Can you talk a little bit about those stages and their characteristics?
I sure can. We've developed an approach that really looks at 4 stages that a business happens to be in. And let me briefly cover those and then potentially give some examples. Stage one is really an entrepreneurial ad hoc business that's transaction-driven and very fragmented in regards to planning and entails essentially quick fixes. As you move into stage two, it's more of an accounting-focused, budget-driven, control-focus of the business with some intermediate planning, maybe 1 to 3 year scope, but primarily silo organizations. Stage three, you get more empowered functional groups, strong functional groups within the organization, and it's performance and customer driven. And supply chain becomes an integral part of the overall corporate strategy where you're performing against standards. Now, where we'd all like to get our companies to is really stage four. It's an integrated supply chain management. Total supply chain performance is cost-driven. Products are pulled through the organization, that is, demand-driven, not pushed, and includes vendors, customers, and related operations. So that's sort of a high-level definition of what we're talking about from a company. And we said we'd focus today on stage four, integrated supply chain management. Let's talk about that in some detail. You have an environment that's very much of a strategic focus, includes the vendors and key customers, very much integrated planning across the supply chain, and rather sophisticated information systems that Linda will talk more about later. From an action standpoint, you've got an organization that challenges assumptions, and they really utilize the pretty sophisticated analytical tools, and they develop strong supply chain relationships both internally and with customers and suppliers. So you've got an integrated process with your partners. Typical opportunities relate to potentially reallocating production at times. Do you want to look at if you should be manufacturing versus outsourcing? You're sharing the forecast data both internally and across your customers and suppliers. It gives you an opportunity then to improve quality, drastically reduce inventory, improve customer service, and we're always focused on improving the overall bottom line profitability as we move from stage one to stage four.
Well, Gary, you did mention three key benefits: improved quality, reduced inventory, and improved customer service, and as those relate and being key areas to improve profitability. And so, of course, as a business improves quality, they have less rework, and that reduces cost. Reducing inventory is a big one because that releases capital tied up in inventory, and often that capital is financed, so you have carrying costs and interest costs that are reduced. And finally, when you improve customer service, that usually helps increase sales and reduce costs that come from price reductions and other appeasements to unhappy customers. So those are key points. When we talk about moving from stage one to stage four, what are some of the trigger points within a business that would generate an urgency to transition people? Because as I talked about in the beginning, people don't really like to change. And so if you do it through incremental change, but even incremental change, you've got to get some sort of urgency going to do that transition. And so what do you see as some of the triggers that create that urgency?
You make a good point that supply chains typically evolve. And some of the trigger points as far as saying, hey, it's really time to take an overall look at what we're doing relate to mergers and acquisitions, where you're integrating additional businesses into your operation that have different customer service demands, different products, different needs from an overall standpoint. Economic conditions, such as we have at the present time, are also definitely a trigger point because companies are looking for opportunities to reduce costs, improve service, and get some additional market share. And this is a time to make changes because a lot of companies have retrenched, cut staff, and therefore for the aggressive companies to step out, they can grab market share and be very well positioned for the upturn. Also, changes in product mix or demand for products, as that starts moving dramatically, can make a difference. Changes in customer requirements, such as a faster delivery, customization, ordering, etc., and headcount reductions. A lot of times, there'll be headcount reductions without changes in process, and as the headcounts are reduced, it starts forcing companies to think about what do we need to do to improve the process so we can operate with a lower headcount. And technology advances are really a key when it comes to moving forward from a stage one to a stage four. Technology is critical for stage four companies.
Well, that's true. I worked with a client last year that was a rather large company in stage one, and they were certainly in a very painful situation. They had several of these trigger points going on. Their inventory had more than doubled, with their inventory turns being less than two. A lot of that had come from they had made multiple acquisitions in the last 10 years. And so everybody was on different systems, and most of those systems were older technology. As a matter of fact, the core system that they were using for the main company was a 20-year-old MRP system. And with all that taken into account, they were now 3 years behind in their production. So they had a real painful situation going on, and one of the things that we were helping them with was, first of all, how to get the technology straightened up so that then they could do some of the things that you're going to talk about in getting their company turned around and move from a really low stage one company into a stage three or stage four organization. So can you give us a few examples of some stage four companies and what makes them excel?
I sure can, Linda. Let's talk about Dell and Walmart briefly. We're all familiar with those two businesses. As you look at Dell, you recognize you get a very quick response on your order. And I've experienced that earlier this year when I placed an order for Dell, a new laptop computer, and received the computer in a very few days, and everything was working fine. Yet, if you look at Dell, I mean, the complexity of the business is unreal. The products are evolving on an ongoing basis and being upgraded. They have over 1 million part numbers per year that they're dealing with, 200 product families, and if you can believe it, 2 million bills of material per year to build assemblies and sub-assemblies. So it's really critical for them to have effective technology and really have a demand-pull organization as far as through the overall supply chain versus trying to forecast what's required with a push system. Now, Walmart is also well-known for its procurement. It's a very tough negotiator, hard bargainer with their suppliers. And they also have outstanding customer service. Again, some numbers for you. They have 80,000 items stored in 40 DCs, if you can believe that. Their transportation is very fast and progressive. They have 3,500 company-owned trucks and 10,000 suppliers. So, again, they have a very sophisticated system. And, Linda, you may want to talk about the importance of the pull system and the technology that's there versus what we used to do with the push system, where we're speculating on what the client really needed.
Well, yes, you have mentioned the push and pull a couple of times. And so technology with advanced what we call MRP, or Material Requirements Planning Systems, and their partner ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning Systems, which are the finance side of it, really enable us to do sophisticated forecasting from the standpoint of what our customers want. As we get into more partner arrangements with customers, or even provide technology can do this too, like when you're talking about Dell. Dell has a website where they list their standard product categories, and then you go through the whole website of being able to configure your own computer or your own server, and when they get done, then that order gets placed. I mean, imagine doing that with an automobile manufacturer. You know, automobile manufacturers do just the opposite of what we talk about, and we see that both with Japanese and American automobile manufacturers. Some of it has to do with distribution in that it takes them a long time to get the product to the marketplace, but a lot of it has to do with just that they haven't been set up so that they can easily take an order and then have a car assembled as it goes down the line, like Dell does in terms of assembling a computer. And I would say that cars may be a little bit more complex than computers because they're bigger, but certainly with the numbers you laid out with Dell, they're dealing with an awful lot. It's not an easy manufacturing process by any stretch of the imagination. So the two key components of technology to allow you to do this forecasting and creating products based on demand are your modernized MRP and ERP systems. So since we have talked about that, can you talk, Gary, about some of the initiatives that a company's management team should consider to maximize the supply chain performance?
I sure can. First, let's talk about what kind of strategic moves the company might think about doing. Strategic, you look at things from a top-down perspective, strategic, and it's important to really assess a company's overall supply chain network design to ensure that your sourcing, subcontracting, manufacturing, and distribution operations and technology are really optimized and integrated across the business. So you're really looking a lot at the network design. Should you be manufacturing or subcontracting? Should you be working with third-party providers? versus having your own trucks and warehouses and things along that line.
And then so in order to do this, you're going to, the first thing is you have to do an overall look, because I see lots of companies that say, oh, well, we'll just go out and buy a new MRP system. But what I hear you saying with this, without a good plan, just a new MRP system isn't going to do any good, and I would agree wholeheartedly with that.
Yeah, we've experienced that with some clients, haven't we, Linda? They want to
buy
a system, but they really don't look at how they're doing business and what the kind of things they need to do to make changes.
Right.
And I could also reinforce, as Linda did, that the push systems, we can forget about those. They're not effective because we're not interested in speculating what kind of requirements the company might have. We're interested in really a pull business system so we can ensure that manufacturing, logistics, and channel partners are really synchronized with product sales and it is really a pull system driven by the actual demand so we get the right products at the right time. Another thing to take a look at is really product design and development. To ensure that you can really accelerate the design and development process, as I really mentioned that Dell does, for example. From the standpoint of procurement materials, this is a significant opportunity, which I'll expand upon later. It's really a focus on vendor consolidation and strategic sourcing to maximize the relationship you do have with your vendors, keep down your materials cost, raw material, finished goods, sub-assemblies, and also your transportation and warehousing costs. Manufacturing, you need to make sure that you've concentrated on lean manufacturing and shop floor control, and also consider outsourcing options versus doing things internally. But if you start outsourcing, you really need to look at the control and the interfaces you will need to have with your outsourced suppliers and the additional transportation costs you're likely to encounter.
So those have to be balanced, right?
They sure do. And from the distribution and logistics standpoint, you really focus on improving the overall process and, again, considering outsourcing with third-party providers. From a market interface standpoint, you want to make sure you've got vendor-linked systems and vendor-managed inventory. In other words, your vendors are set up so that they're getting feedback in regards to your customer sales and very often your customer's customer sales and feeding that information back to your vendor who is set up to automatically generate materials for you, where it's raw material or component parts, forward them to you. There's automatic billing and automatic payment. Linda, you may want to take the lead and talk a little bit more about pull systems again for Dell.
Okay, well, yeah, we've talked about the traditional manufacturing process being based on normally forecast, and forecast had been traditionally, forecast is taken off of what was sold in prior years. And as we know, with the way our economy changes and people's tastes change and technology changes, fads change, that basing what you are going to sell this year on what you sold last year ends up in a dangerous scenario. And so that's how companies end up with bloated inventories. And then they start doing cost-cutting. As consumers, that's always great because we like to see cost-cutting, but it's better if we can buy the products that we really want and businesses can have lower cost to begin with just based on the way they manufacture. So by doing our forecasting for manufacturing based on more accurate demand requirements, which come from what our customers are really looking at or being able to do it immediately like Dell does. You know, in the case of Walmart, they're a regular retailer, so they can't wait to do just in time. They have to have stuff on their shelves to sell, but they're keeping greater control over the pulse of where things are going, and based on the agreements that they have with their vendors and the people that supply the products that they sell, they've got a better chance to move product and keep prices lower, which keeps everything moving off the shelves. And I would, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I'd like to see the automobile manufacturers go to something like that too. So let's, Gary, let's talk about procurement a little bit and how that affects inventory and quality and customer service. So some of the things from from strategic sourcing. You talked a little bit about that before, but how does a company go about setting that up? What are some of the benefits of strategic sourcing and just everything to do with that particular area?
Fine, I'll go ahead with that. As you look at really strategic sourcing, we're talking about doing procurement of raw materials, component parts, and finished goods in a very effective manner. We're really negotiating with our suppliers. And this is a way to get a real quick cost reduction for most companies. And I'll give some examples in a couple minutes. But as you look at sourcing, what you're interested in doing, you're interested in looking at the number of vendors you're dealing with and where you're purchasing similar parts from a variety of vendors. So you're interested in consolidating your vendor base, having fewer vendors to work with on an overall basis, using your purchasing leverage then with them to get price reductions across the board, and at the same time improve overall customer service and have them set up so they're very responsive to you and they're getting the information, as I mentioned earlier, from your customers or customers' customers in regards to the sales that are taking place, and so they're in a sound position in regards to getting product to you, minimizing inventories as you really look through the overall process from the standpoint of raw materials, inventories, work-in-process inventories, and also finished goods inventory. If you want to look at some numbers, strategic sourcing is an opportunity to typically reduce costs from what we're seeing from our clients, 15 to 22%. Sounds like a big number. But here's an example of a medical products company, a well-known one, that just went through looking at their transportation costs. I had a conversation with the Vice President of Supply Chain Management just recently. And they went through and looked at all their transportation lanes and the payments they were making, and they came up with a range of savings across their lanes from 2% to 20%. This is on a domestic and international basis. And they got an overall savings of 16%, which made an important impact on the overall bottom line of the business. And they also had to be very careful as they looked at switching vendors that they can meet the FDA requirements, who watches them very closely, where the supply chain manager has to go in, talk with the FDA, and convince them that things are being handled properly, they're safe, temperatures are maintained. And so vendor-managed inventory is really a key way to go.
So does strategic sourcing and vendor-managed inventory go together, or?
They sure do, Linda. Right.
Okay. Yep.
Because you've really put a lot of credibility and a lot of, how should I say, a lot of strong relationships together with your vendors so you can count on them getting the right products to you when you need them so they flow quickly through your overall supply channel to your customers and customers' customers.
Well, and that's where what you talked about before, vendors really become partners with you. And I would think, based on our what we said earlier, that part of helping you reduce cost is improving quality, that you would see some natural tendency to improve quality in a situation where you're doing more strategic sourcing, number one, so that means you're dealing with less vendors, and you can watch the quality coming out of those vendors. You're working closer with them, so assuming they're a strong partner, they're going to want to improve quality more and more and do more of a just-in-time scenario, which gets you to your vendor-managed inventory. They're watching your demand coming in, right? And so then they're able to plan their own production to get the product to you just in the time that you're going to need to use it. And then that all folds into the technology that goes to do that. It's very difficult to be able to do that without using modern technology that's available. Web interfaces, integration between each company's ERP and MRP systems, so that when an order comes in to Dell, for example, let's just use them as an example. If an order comes in to Dell, then Dell gathers up all those orders and sends them out to their key suppliers of disk drives and memory and shells for the laptops or the servers or whatever, and everything that has to be made. And they're constantly feeding the demand that they're getting to the vendors that they have that supply the parts that go into their computers, and then they're getting those parts back to Dell just in time so that Dell's not having to stock a whole lot of that, you know, so that if I go in and let's say the standard computer has a 60-gigabyte hard drive and I decide that I want a 200-gigabyte hard drive, then Dell's hard drive manufacturer now sees that demand and knows what mix of size of hard drives to ship to Dell. So it's key that the technology enables this type of thought process, where before, even as recently as 10 to 15 years ago, you wouldn't have had the technology available to handle these types of processes and this type of integration between a company and their suppliers. So, Gary, you always suggest that companies perform a supply chain assessment as the first step. Can you just discuss what's in that assessment and how a company would approach one?
I sure can. Let me get an overview and then talk about the various component parts. What we're doing is really looking at an overall company across their supply chain and trying to determine what stage they're in, whether it's one, two, three, or four, across a variety of areas. So what we like to do is to assemble cross-functional teams, introduce them to the stages concept by talking through each one of the stages and where a company's likely to be if they're in that stage. Then we ask the team members to discuss and define where they believe their company falls across the stages by major supply chain component, gain agreement on the stage for each process. Now, we could go out and we could conduct this process ourselves through a number of interviews, but we find out that by assembling cross-functional teams, get them to discuss, they'll come to some agreement typically in regards to what stage they're in versus us coming in and making a report.
So this and then you have buy-in also if the company kind of does it on their own or you just facilitate them going through it.
That's really a key. And the key components that we would go through and take a look at forecasting, purchasing and vendor management, production planning, inventory management, transportation management in each one of the areas, and also customer service. And let me give customer service as an example as far as the depth of the analysis that we would go through with customer service. And what we're really looking at is essentially five areas. We would first look at the strategy and focus, the organization and processes, the planning and control concept, performance measurement, and systems. And we would look at this in each one of the four stages. Let me give an example for the systems area. If a company's in stage one, the system functionality usually includes bills of material, hot list, daily meetings to decide on what to do next. As you move into stage two, system functionality typically includes accounts receivable, credit, billing, inventory, pick lists, consolidation of shipments, and matching batch orders with interfaces. As you move into stage three, you've got more integrated accounts receivable, credit, billing type activities. Forecasting includes customer input, and visibility is provided for order entry through the delivery of the payment, as we mentioned earlier. Now, stage four, where you'd like to get to, you really have EDI links to channel partners. Channel systems are shared, processes are paperless, and they're demand-driven by point-of-sales operations. So we essentially work through this, get an agreement on what stage a company is in, compare it with best practices, which we have developed, and identify the gaps, and then we can talk about implementation. Linda, why don't you expand on this systems area, if you would, and what's really required for a stage four company?
Well, a stage four company on systems, EDI that you had mentioned, Gary, is certainly one area of an ability where technology allows you to integrate with your partners and with your customers. You know, one of the key things, and like you said, you want things paperless. So if you have a traditional situation where either your people are calling on customers or customers call in, or fax in, you know, that's probably around a stage two, right, where you have that situation where that's how they call in and give you their orders. The better way, as you move up into the stages, is for that to become more electronic and more automatic. So now they're sending in orders through EDI, which is electronic, and then that can go directly into your MRP system for an order. The other way is for it to come in via a website. And companies sometimes have generic websites like Bell that we've talked about, and probably people in our audience, a lot of them have used a lot of different websites for that. Or you'll find that companies that do business-to-business transactions, they will have secure websites just for certain customers. One of my clients that I had worked with, they had a variety of websites for all of their different large customers because they supplied uniforms for fast food restaurants. So they had a website for McDonald's. They had a website for Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now, all of these websites were very similar, but each website then had the product and the prices that had been negotiated with that particular customer. So now they weren't spending a lot of money with outbound sales or with people that had to take those orders. Those customers, when McDonald's, when a McDonald's franchise hired somebody new, they just went in to the website, picked out what uniforms that those new employees needed, and put the order through. And then the other thing that the technology provided is because within their systems now, they were able to have, call it a bill of materials or a pattern for, let's say, what McDonald's uniforms looked like. So they knew what patches to put on them, what embroidery had to be done, what components went with that particular uniform. So now when that order was put in by a McDonald's franchise, it could be automatically sent through their system to have all of the preparation done, and then the uniform either delivered, hand delivered, if that was the type of service that that franchise had, or mailed to them. And so that type of integration now, you want it done electronically through websites or through EDI. And then, of course, your demand forecasting and procurement becomes the flip side of that. So now your MRP system takes all these orders that have come in automatically. It's running on a regular basis. Traditionally, MRP systems took so long to run, they'd run them at best once a day and sometimes only once a week. And so then you had all this expediting going on the shop floor. If you have situations going on where you have modern MRP systems that can do these demand forecasting by running MRP on a much more real-time basis, then you're constantly getting the forecast out. The system will put out recommended purchase orders, and then again, you want that integration going in so that when a buyer approves that, yes, we do need to have that purchase order and we're going to send it through to this vendor, it already has on it the negotiated prices you have with the vendor based on the strategic sourcing that you've talked about, Gary, and selected the vendor that it's supposed to go to based on your strategic sourcing, and then you send that. So then that goes into the vendor's automated system as an order. And so the whole process works automatically all the way through. If everybody's a stage four company, it can be a much less paper and much less human intervention to get all of this going. And that's the key that then enables you to cut costs. And the biggest cost, I think, Gary, and what we've been talking about, is getting your inventory under control. By doing all of these processes, having the technology and the process in place to be a stage four company, what ends up happening is you are so efficient in what you are ordering and manufacturing that you have less waste in terms of lack of quality products that can't even go out to customers. That's a big area of waste and cost that manufacturing companies have, and in a lot of cases distributors also, is they get bad products so they have to send it back. In holding your inventory, because as we mentioned before, you have all these carrying costs for carrying inventory. You have write-off costs when you end up not being able to sell it, or the cost of reducing prices. And this constant change in pricing, which of course always cuts into your profitability if you can't sell it at the price that you originally planned. So when you can become a true stage four organization with technology and process and your whole strategic plan in place, then you become much better at being able to have just the product at the right time that your customers want. And I think that's the key to the whole thing. What are your thoughts on that, Gary?
I think you're definitely on the mark. And what Linda's done, she's given an example of how it's important for us to talk through and really get the client multifaceted, multidisciplined team to understand what happens from stage one through to stage four and what the benefits are, so they can really better look at their own organization, see where they are, select the stage that they're in, and then we'll do that gap analysis with best practices. And after we've gone through that, then we ask the team to develop estimates of what they see as the potential savings, the improvements in service that would exist by moving from one stage to the next, and then prepare estimates of implementation timing and associated cost, and then really put priorities on where you're interested in starting. Are you interested in starting from an overall strategic standpoint, or are you interested in focusing in on key opportunities as you move forward? That's the key thing then, is really to get agreement on the priorities, set up the staff and implementation teams, and then initiate implementation with real effective management by a steering committee of cross-functional members within the audience. I think that's really a key thing.
Great, great. Well, this has been some really good information. I'm going to go ahead and unmute the lines, and we'll see if we have any questions out in the audience.
Okay,
everybody's unmuted. Is there any questions that anybody has for Gary or myself?
If not, I might go ahead and mention a couple questions that were typically asked.
Okay.
And that is, what steps can companies take to overcome resistance to change and to upgrade supply chain operations? And a way to do that is to really to get into this diagnostic assessment with a multifunctional team so they can understand where they are and they can start seeing the benefits of making the changes. And when that starts to happen, you get buy-in, and then you can move forward with at least less resistance to change.
And overcoming resistance is definitely getting people to buy in and think it's their idea and take ownership of that idea. I know that's some of the challenges that I have also with some of my clients.
Right. Another question that typically comes up is, you know, should we start with a comprehensive implementation plan or go after short-term savings first? That really depends upon the organization itself in regards to if they're interested in really stepping back and taking the time to make the major changes, or are there some places where you can start and get some quick hits and therefore put yourself in a place to really fund more significant changes as it relates to systems in particularly. And a good place to start to find a short-term savings, I've mentioned that, strategic sourcing of materials and transportation. Significant opportunities to make savings there, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, and certainly in this economy, it is a good place for companies to start, because if they can find out all that they buy from individual vendors or where they have duplicate vendors and select one and go to them with, hey, we're going to buy X amount, and can you give us a better deal? In the current economy, companies are much more open to holding on to a customer they already have, and trying to become more effective with that than to have to go out and get new business. So Gary, let's give everybody your contact information in case they'd like to get in touch with you to ask any questions about today or contact you for some help.
I sure will, Linda. I'm Gary Campbell. I'm president of the Impact Consulting Group. My telephone number is 310-396-8439. My website is impact-cg.com. So impact, I-M-P-A-C-T-cg.com. and you can take a look at the breadth of our services, and in particular in the supply chain area, there's some great case studies in there. And one final thing that you may want to address, Linda, would be from a system standpoint, where's a good place to start upgrading systems? Do you do the whole thing at one time, or do you do things on a piecemeal basis? How do companies make that decision?
Well, today our systems are very integrated, and in the old days you used to be able to replace individual modules at a time, and today it's much more difficult to do that. So usually what we do is we go through an evaluation and make sure we find the system that best fits all the category needs. And I think that's key, because in before, when systems weren't integrated and people bought individual modules, they were only looking siloed at the function that that module had to have. So let's say it was accounts payable. So they would get what they needed for accounts payable and not take into account the rest of the organization and how it would impact it, and as they added new functionality, how it would impact it. So my recommendation for companies today is that you do a comprehensive evaluation. Select the MRP and ERP system that best fits the needs that the company is going to have going forward, and then you may implement certain core functionality first and then add on. So a common theme is if a company doesn't use purchase orders, they will implement core system functionality with accounts payable, doing it the way they did before, and then they'll add purchasing on later. Or the other thing is, in order to get to really a stage four organization, you need not only a core MRP and ERP system, but to get to where you're not using a lot of paper and you have electronic documents that can flow, document management is one of the key components. And our teleseminar 3 weeks ago was on document management systems. And so that becomes a key. So you can put in your ERP system first and get that functioning, and then go back and put in your document imaging, or the other way around. So there are ways to break it up. But the key today is the good thing is that these systems are integrated, and you want to look at it as a whole, even though you're going to try and find piecemeal ways to get portions of it implemented.
So you're interested in going with one vendor then, is what you're saying, and then maybe you implement on a phase basis.
Correct. That's correct.
Right.
That's correct. Well, I want to thank everybody, and Gary especially, for your time today. A recording of this will be available on our website at www.ljrconsultingservices.com. Our next Hidden Profits teleseminar will be on Thursday, September 24th at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. You can contact me via email at Linda, L-Y-N-D-A, dot Roth, R-O-T-H, at ljrconsultingservices.com, or by phone at 818-709-6583. Also, please visit my blog, hiddenprofitsblog.com, where we talk about a lot of the things that we have on our teleseminars and a lot of ways for companies to find hidden profits within their organizations. Thank you very much, and we will see you on the next seminar, or talk to you on the next seminar. Bye for now.